Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. I'm Andy Mittens, podcast sponsored by redarmybet.com. Check our website out for the latest odds and offers. We've got a special guest today, which is Tony Coughton, the former goalkeeper with huge number of games, well over 500 games in the Football League and the Premier League for Birmingham City, Hereford United, Watford, Manchester City, Manchester United played at Sunderland, and he also played for England B. Tony is from Tamworth originally, but he lives in the Northwest now, and he's currently Aston Villa's head of recruitment. And we've got him on the podcast because, as United We Stand readers may have seen, he's done a book, he's done his autobiography, There To Be Shot At. There's some brilliant stories in there about Manchester United, about his life as a goalkeeper. And it covers some pretty heavy subjects as well, like depression, but he had a really, really good career. And I can remember Tony signing in 96, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, as we sit in Birch Services on the M62. Before him going up to watch Sunderland against Bristol City and me going to watch Manchester United to Tottenham. I think he was the only signing in the double winning season in 96. 500,000, Tony, is that right?
I think it was 400,000, Andy, to be honest. I stand corrected as well, because I don't know whether I was the only signing. I think I was the only signing in the in January when I made the move, I think all your facts that you've just said were correct.
So you've done a book.
Apart from Hereford, I only played in the reserves at Hereford, like Man United. I've done a book. I was released on the 21st of September. Sales have gone really, really well. It's taken me by surprise, to be honest. I've helped a journalist friend out who you know as well,
called Simon.
It's called Simon Mullock.
Simon Mullock is a City fan, but we don't mind him. We'll give him a pass on that, because he's a good lad, Simon, and he's a decent footballer in his day, and he's a bit of a non-league addict as well, but I've got a lot of time for Simon.
Simon approached me a number of years ago at a mutual friend's party, and I said no, and then they've been badgering me, and I finally caved in. And it's been an experience, and it's brought back some really, really happy memories, but it's brought some sad memories back doing the book, which of course, when you're telling the truth, would happen.
So we'll talk a little bit about your early career. I mean, Birmingham City was your breakthrough team.
Yeah.
What was life like there?
If I keep mentioning the book, then I'm only telling you extracts that are in it, and I talk about my life and how I got into football. So I'd left Aston Villa, and I was playing non-league football when I was asked to go down for a trial, and Birmingham was the team I supported as a boy. So for me, it was a dream, and I'd had rejection from Wolverhampton Wanderers, when I was a schoolboy, and then I had a sort of semi-rejection from Aston Villa. And I say semi is because I ended up walking out of them after an altercation in the digs. But you know, so I weren't going to let this chance slip by, especially with a team that I supported. And went through the normal trial periods, you know, and then I was given a pro contract at 17. All the usual, out with the jobs, with the apprentices, this, that, and the other. Then I was released. Then I was reinstated because I'd gone on the end of season tour and done really well, and Jim Smith thought I'd made a mistake. So I got re-signed. Not long after Jim Smith was sacked, Ron Saunders come in, and I'd already made my debut and had a handful of games, but it was Ron Saunders that really put me in the team on a regular basis.
An altercation in Diggs. A previous guest on this podcast was John Gidman, who was at Aston Villa, and he had to leave his digs because he was sleeping with his landlady. And John tells some brilliant stories. In fact, John's stories are so scandalous he had to leave half of them out. But I spoke to John last week. He's down in living on the Costa del Sol soon, still. And Mick Rathbone was at Birmingham City. He did a really good book called The Smell of Football, and he said he broke into Birmingham's first team, but he was sat next to his hero Trevor Francis, and he was completely in awe of him to the point that, you know, he was nervous about passing him the ball.
Well, listen, obviously I know both of those well. And just going back to Giddy, you know, I didn't have an altercation in my days over my landlady. If you'd have seen my landlady at the time, then you'd explain why. But, you know, yeah, Mick Rathbone. I used to share in the book, I talk about sharing a car with Mick Rathbone, and him and Steve Fox, whose mum and dad's house backed onto my mum and dad's house in Tamworth, and who was really responsible for me going into football and wanting to be a footballer, because I'd followed his path through junior football, the same schools, and obviously when I went on the terrace and seen Steve Fox playing for the first team, that's what I wanted. But the experiences of Mickey Rathbone, like you say, what inspired me, really, I'd be sat in the back of this mini clubman that Mick would be driving, that he never ever left the keys in the ignition when we went on away games, hoping that it would be nicked, but it never was. You know, of those not having confidence in their own ability, and I thought, I could never ever be like that. You know, if you want to strive to be a top professional, you've got to have confidence in your own ability. Those two would be talking about, I hope I'm not with the first team this morning, I hope I'm not training, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, and if we had a practice match, because one was a right winger, one was a left back, they'd say, well, you have a good first half and I'll have the good, better second half, I'll get the better of you, you know, we'll both stand out. And it was like that, and I couldn't believe I was listening to these conversations. And then one day we were going down the dual carriageway and I'm sat at the back, and the right-hand side, the driver's side at the back, dropped down, and the next minute his wheel's overtaken us, you know, and his wheel's gone bombing down. We've sort of grind to a halt, and he went, oh, well, I won't tell you what he said, but what am I going to do now? Anyway, we just got out, left the car, thumbed a lift, got to training. 3 days later, I've gone past, and his car was still there. His car was still there, but that was Mickey Rathbone. He's a character, and as I say, what a good book that was.
The book's called The Smell of Football, and Mick's agreed to come on this podcast, so I should catch up with him sooner rather than later. And he's not played at United, but he has had a lot of connections with United. But he left Birmingham City, went to Blackburn Rovers, broke into the first team. For the first time in his life, was thinking, I am the man. So he'd go and celebrate after each training session with 4 or 5 pints. Then he'd play a bit of snooker. Then he'd have a little sleep. Then he'd go back to the pub for another 3 or 4 pints. And then he'd finish off the day. This was every day. By going to the chippy and having pudding, chips, peas, gravy and a balm cake. And after 6 weeks, he was wondering why he'd been dropped from the first team.
Yeah, I don't think we had dietitians in them days, you know. Yeah, it was, it was commonplace. It was in the late 70s, early 80s, even into early 90s, really. You know, sports science hadn't even been introduced. You know, I mean, I was at Man City in the first team, and we hadn't got a gym, you know, so let alone a masseur or anything like that. You had one physio that did everything, you know, so Certainly not. I even remember at Watford, we used to finish training when I was at Watford, and there'd be four or five of us, Tim Sherwood, Ewan Roberts, myself, we'd go into the local cafe after training, and I always remember it, Tim used to order the same thing, corned beef, chips and egg, we were in the first division, the Premier League as it is now, and we're having corned beef, chips and egg. I mean, if we were to do that now, you'd get frowned upon. But that was the way it was, and I can understand Mick, he might have slightly exaggerated with the 4 pints. I've seen him with 4 pints in him.
you mentioned Watford then. I saw a picture of you on Twitter when I was researching this with Watford fans. You seem extremely popular among Watford fans. What was your high point in your time at Vicarage Road?
Obviously winning the Player of the Year 3 times, being inducted into their Hall of Fame, second behind, there's only one person that could, if there's any, going to be behind anyone, it was Luther Blissett, because he is Mr. Watford. So to be inducted second was a major, major privilege to me. I had 6 wonderful years there. So the highlight, really, there were some low points, missing the semi-final with a broken thumb. Broke that the day before in training, but the high points really was, I suppose, I felt that it was probably the best time of my career in terms of playing wise. And I was there 24 to 30 years of age, I think the Watford fans saw the best of Tony Coton. I feel that was my best time. There was a lot of high points. Graham got me away in 1984 from the environment I was in. I'd been in a couple of scrapes off the field, so it was
what type of scrapes?
Well, I'd had a couple of barroom balls and brawls. Never ever caused a fight in my life, never looked for trouble, never ever. It just seemed that the town I was from, Tamworth, I was like the famous one, and this, that and the other. And people will tell you that people used to sort of badmouth you, jealousy, what it was. And my mate say, well, you've never ever met him, so how can you say these things? He's this, he's that, he's that.
Is that not a very English thing, especially in the
North?
Yeah, it
is. We love to knock people down when we're doing well, don't we? You know what I mean? So I was from this town, and I'd probably say that, I'm not being big-headed, but half the town who knew me, liked me, loved me, the other town who didn't, the other side didn't, blah, 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 always wanted to have a pop. And then when you're playing for Birmingham, and you've got half Birmingham, half Villa, a little bit of Wolves and West Brom thrown into the town as well, people were there to have a go. Hence the title that we came up with. Tina Mullett come up with it, Simon's wife. Obviously being a goalkeeper, so that. But then the off the field, people coming and having a pop at me, and I was there to be shot at, which is the title of the book. So, unfortunately, I remember my dad's advice when I went to the big school. He said, don't run away, stand up to the bullies, this, that and the other. And I've carried that all through my life. And Kenny Rogers sings about a song, when you got to walk away when you're a man, turn the other cheek. I could never do that. I seemed to get the better of people, and then your reputation got sort of around the town, and then it was doorman mainly that would always try and have a pop, so I was always fighting with doorman. So there's not as many as made out, but that's how it happened. And
Graham Taylor took you out of that environment.
He took me out
football
of it.
Became your focus.
So from 1984, I've never really had an argument. I've been in trouble. I've never had a parking fine or anything. I've been the model professional, and I just needed to get away from that environment, really.
And then your next move was to Manchester City for £1 million. You're the most expensive goalkeeper. I saw your home debut, not because I'm a Blue. No, honestly, I'm not a Blue. My GCSE geography project, I did it on the sphere of influences of football teams in Greater Manchester, where they attract the fans from. And I wrote a letter to every football league club in Manchester asking if I could come to a game, and only two responded, Oldham Athletic and Manchester City. So I saw your debut. I saw a game, I think it was QPR 1990, 23,000 people there at Main Road.
Not the Monday night one.
No, it wasn't the Sky Sports one. It was very, very early on in your career, if not your debut. But
I think my debut for City was, well, I know my City for debut, my debut for City was away at Tottenham.
Okay, yeah, it might be your home or very
yeah,
early.
And
on.
Then I think my next one was at home to Everton.
Yes, yes, that was it.
And
that
we
was
won 1-0.
That was it, 1-0.
Yeah.
Clive Allen.
You've got a better memory than me.
Yeah.
I'm normally very good with that, but yeah, yeah, quite possibly actually.
You've got 4 seconds to talk about your time at Manchester City. No, I'm only joking. And I know you are held in great affection by Blues. Tell me your low and high points in your time at Main Road.
I got a bad injury when I was at City, which is cool. Really, I got the injury in the, I think it was the October, where I'd ripped a muscle in a thigh that went into a blood clot, this, that and the other. By that time, I think it was, so I think I helped John Burridge become the oldest, maybe
that,
the oldest
yeah.
player or the oldest yeah. goalkeeper. I don't know whether he's get that record, because he come on for me. So consequently, I got that, and then in that summer, Brian Orton was replaced by Alan Ball. So I worked all through the pre-season, played about 12, 15 reserve games, and it was a time of Franny Lee had taken over, and he made it clear that I wasn't welcome at the club.
He told you?
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't the manager?
Although he wasn't the manager, he acted like he was the manager,
yeah.
You know, which I didn't like, and obviously, consequently, I say some things in the book, which I mean,
yeah.
which are the truth.
Yeah.
Make no bones about that.
Yeah.
So that was the lowest point, really, was that injury. I didn't get back from in a City shirt. And I never had the chance, really, to say goodbye. I never ever wanted to leave. I've got to be honest, I never wanted to leave. I loved it at Man City. You know, football's football, being what it is, certain people in certain roles where they shouldn't have been, and I was pushed out the door along with others that followed, senior pros basically. It was no surprise to see City go the way they did. Anyway,
was it a surprise to be pushed out the door to Manchester United?
Massive surprise to go there. And what people don't realise is when one person, your employees are telling you that you've got no future there, you know, and you know for a fact that they want the money to sign Nigel Clough, you know, I could hold them to ransom a little bit, you know, in terms of they wanted me out, but they didn't want to pay me what they owed me on my contract, this, that and the other, typical City at the time, you know, I knew this, but I generally didn't want to leave, and then all of a sudden I'm moving house and I'm driving over Barton Bridge, and I think car phones or mobile phones had just been introduced, this, that and the other, and I was lucky enough to have one, and I was moving from South Manchester to Bolton, where my wife's from. Regretted it ever since, but never mind.
Why?
Just I loved the house that I was in yeah. South Manchester. I really loved it. I was in Bramall.
Right.
But I love, listen, Bolton people and this, yeah, that, yeah. really, you know. In fact, just as we're talking now, we're moving again out into the country, so I'm looking forward to that. I got a total call out of the blue from Julie McCrindle, the manager's secretary, and said, we've accepted a bid from Man United, you're free to go and speak to them. And I nearly went over the side of Barton Bridge, you know, and I, what? And I couldn't wait to get to the get to the house that we're moving into, and the removals were there and all that. I set my wife to one side. I said, just had a phone call from Man United. What? Now, there'd been interest from Sunderland, and she said, look, I don't want to go to Sunderland. We're moving into this house. So everything sort of just dropped into place. I met Martin Edwards, I met Sir Alex, and as I say, Sir Alex, once you meet him, it was like when I signed for Watford with Graham Taylor. You're never ever coming away from there without signing.
He knew what he wanted. And
he explained to me exactly what he wanted.
Which was?
So it's 1996, it's January 1996, we're 12 points behind Newcastle, the infamous Kevin Keegan rant season. And he said, listen, he said, I want some experience to keep Peter on his toes. You know, he's lost that little edge. He's missing training because he knows he's going to be playing. He says, I want to put an edge back to his game. He said, because, and I admit, you know, there's no one better than Peter around. Although I got voted goalkeeper of the year a few times ahead of him, but for me, Peter was magnificent.
What was his first reaction when you met him?
He welcomed me.
Yeah.
You know, but he's a confident bloke, yeah, and like bordering on arrogance, isn't he? Yeah. You know, which you need to play the position anyway.
Yeah.
And he was fine. He was great with me. Great. You know, what he was saying behind my back, I don't know, but yeah. I don't think anything. I think what you see with Pete is what you get.
Yeah.
And he was fine. We trained together, and you know, anything I needed, any help, or explained how it worked. He was great, and I did what it said on the tin and what he bought me for. I never played for the reserves. That was another experience, playing with the Beckham and Scholes and Nicky Butts and the Nevilles and people like that at times. So you could see how good they were going to be. You know, I come in, Peter put an edge to his game, and slowly we clawed the deficit back, and then they're going to St James's Park and winning 1-0, Eric's volley off Phil Neville's cross, and Peter really, the difference between an heavy defeat and us winning 1-0.
We had Martin Edwards in the latest United We Stand mag, and he picks that game out as
a turning point.
Yeah, just yeah. as like, well, if we wouldn't have won, said that would have been it.
Yeah, you know.
It was incredible. I was there that night in the away end.
Yeah.
And I stayed up in Newcastle and saw Geordies fighting with each other afterwards over, because they were coming apart, weren't they?
Yeah.
Including two Newcastle fans in wheelchairs squaring up to each other down on the big market. So that was a first.
Going wheel to wheel then.
Wheel to wheel they were.
So it was a big, you know, sort of, the biggest thing for me was, and I remember it as clear as anything, after the cup final, after the Liverpool win, you know, was Sir Alex coming up to me at the hotel, the function after. We've won the double, which was like an experience for me. I've finally been part of something. I didn't play, so it didn't feel 100%, but I was 90-odd% of part of it, you know, because I hadn't played. But he come up to me, and he didn't have to do it, and he pulled me to one side, and he went, I want to shake your hands. He went, now, you might not have played, he said, but you don't know the part you've played. And I thought that was great, because he said, you've done exactly what I bought you for. He said, he's been magnificent since you arrived. He says, and if you hadn't arrived, he said, because he'd been worried for his place. He said, so you've kept him on his toes, he's not missed a day's training, and he's won us the double. And I thought that was magnificent. He said, how do you feel? And I said, well, I've got to be honest. I said, I've had a right good look at this club. How you do things, do you do things different in training, this, that, and the other? No. What makes you successful? You got the better players. Everything was simple. It was that simple. They had better players.
I've spoken to most of the players you played with, and they talk about how training was played at such an intense level.
At times when he demanded it, the manager, and then because they were involved in a lot of things, obviously cup that year was the cup, got to the final, won the final.
Eric's goal. Liverpool.
Yeah, the white suits. Yeah.
Jinx. What was Eric like?
Well, you're obviously asking me as a person, not as a player, because we all know what he was like as a player. But as a person, he was quiet to the point where it was chalk and cheese with Eric. Off the field, he was a little bit introvert, very quiet. Used to sit on the bus and stare out the window or read, certainly a team player socially. He'd be involved and he'd be there if there was, you know, a bit of team spirit needed, and we'd go out for a drink or whatever. Eric would be there. But come preparing for the game and in and around the training ground, very sociable, polite, but a little bit introvert. Then come match day, you know, he was the extrovert, wasn't he? Come out and showed everybody what he was about, you know, he was magnificent. So going back, the cup final, the manager said that to me, and I said, look, I said, boss, I haven't got many years left. I think I need to finish this career of mine. I said, I've missed a year, more or less, with the injury at Man City in the latter stages, and then coming here, I've missed almost a season. I want to finish my career playing. Zola had come into the Premier League, Ruud Gullit and foreigners, and I just wanted to finish my life. And he said, go away on holiday, enjoy it, he says, and we'll discuss it when you come back. And when I got back, the answer machine was on. TC said, we've had some offers, you're free to speak to these people, I've given them your number. Obviously one was Peter Reid, the other one was Mark McGee at Wolves, and I thought, better the devil you know. Both were offering me the same terms, both were offering me a joint player coaching role. Whatever Sunderland offered, Mark McGee and Wolves matched. But in the end, I just thought, better the devil you know in Peter Reid, and I ended up going to Sunderland.
You would come back to Old Trafford as the goalkeeping coach, yep, for a decade, no? From,
yeah, it was
97.
Yeah, I come really just before the treble, really, I was at Sunderland, and I'd had my broken leg, so wanting to get back in, leaving Man United and wanting to get back playing didn't work out really, because 10 games into my Sunderland career I ended up breaking my leg and had 5 fractures, this, that and the other, and I couldn't get back from it. I was 36 years of age. So then I took the reserves team, we won the league, this, that and the other. Then I had a contractual legal dispute with the club and I was put on gardening leave. And it was during that gardening leave, you know, I bumped into Sir Alex at a game. He said, what's your plans? I said, we got to move back. We want to move back to Manchester area, this, that and the other. He said, well, next time you're in the area, come and see me.
We appreciate the support of our sponsors, which help keep this podcast free for you to enjoy. Harry's is a razor company. It's based in the United States. They've got over 3 million regular subscribers to their blades. And they're offering United We Stand listeners a trial set for only £2.95. It should be £11.50. If you go to harrys.com/United, you can claim your trial set. It'll be delivered to your door. I've received one. I've used it. I liked it. It's a decent shave. You get shaving gel. It's all very nicely packaged. And you get razors with 5 blades at a very decent price, especially compared with other 5 blade razors. And how they did that, Harry's bought a factory in Germany with over 100 years of blade making experience, and they thought that by controlling the entire blade making process and selling over the internet, they could keep the cost down, give you a high quality shave at a better price. So if you go to harrys.com/United, and then for £2.95, you'll get a weighted ergonomic razor handle. You get the blades, the shave gel, a travel blade cover as well. And you can subscribe. You can have them delivered to you as frequently or as infrequently as you like. Or you can just buy them outright if you want to do it. I suggest you just try it, see if you like it, and take it from there.
I said, I'm back tomorrow. I said it like that. I wasn't. I just said, I'm back tomorrow. It's my mother-in-law's birthday. We're down to see her. Come in and see me at the Cliff. So I went straight in. Blah, blah, blah. I've never had a full-time goalie coach, but I know how well you get on with people. You've been here. You've seen it. He went, it'd be something that I'm really interested. That's the way it's going. And I did. And I went in for a week, and Brian Kidd come and stood and watched my coaching. Dave Bushell come and watched it. Sir Alex come and watched it. This, that and the other. You know, fortunately for me, I was accepted, and that career path.
We should get Dave Bushell on there, because he's a great lad, Dave. He's, as well as being a long-time stalwart of Manchester United, he supports Trafford Football Club, his local club, but he's a real character. I think he's 70 now.
Yeah, he's still...
I did a dinner with him earlier on this year. Jeez.
He's still there, and I think his daughter works at the club.
She does, Hayley.
Yeah, in some capacity.
He asked me to put him in touch with Diego Forlan recently.
Oh, yeah.
So that was Hayley who got in touch from United for that. So you worked with several goalkeepers then at United as a goalkeeping coach. You had the last bit of Peter before he went off to Lisbon.
Yeah.
Small matter of winning the treble.
Yes. Which was obviously an unbelievable experience. And people ask me, you know, what stands out from that treble winning year? And I would probably say two major things that stood out was we win the league with Coley. League first, then the FA Cup, and then the Champions League, wasn't it?
Coley's goal against Tottenham.
Yeah, where he's lobbed the keeper. Brilliant. Yeah, he brought it down. Gary Neville's pass, I think it was. He's brought it down and jiggled about with it, and then lobbed the keeper. So we've won the league against Tottenham. And I remember Danny McGregor, who was the commercial manager, if you well know, walking into the changing rooms as we were celebrating it. He's got a Man United shirt on, and as he's turned to walk out, he's got one down, two to go, written on the back of the shirt. And a couple of the players looked at it and went like that.
Like what? As if that shouldn't.
Yeah, you're tempting fate.
Yeah,
type
getting a bit carried
type,
away.
Type of things, but Danny believed that that's what was going to happen. So we go to the FA Cup final, and we're in the changing rooms, and he comes in after the cup final. He's got a different one on. Two down, one to go. And the players are like, now, are they believing in it? Can it happen? You know, here we go. Is it okay, Danny? You know, blah blah blah. And then we win the Champions League in Barcelona, blah blah blah. In he walks, 4-3, job done. You know, so insight.
What did the players do?
You know, hindsight. You know, with Danny and this, that, and the other. You know, and we're. Well, it was just amazing, wasn't it? You know, and going back to the hotel, which you'll know very well, but living close by. I think, was it on the Ramblers or is it St. Stidges, isn't it?
Well, you stayed the night before the game in Stidges in the Melia Hotel, and then the night of the final, you went back to the Arts Hotel, which is down by the port, it's the
I
big
remember
tower.
That, yeah.
I was also there sleeping rough in the car park. I told Martin Edwards this. He said, why don't you just try and get in? I said, I'm just too polite. Yeah. I was with my mates, we'd had a great day. I wasn't working as a journalist. And slept rough, except one of my mates slept on the beach and got robbed.
Oh.
So, you know, never mind. But great party, no?
Yeah, great party.
What part, do you think when Teddy and Ollie scored? And I know you've played for different teams and you grew up as a Birmingham City fan. Do you get an affection for the clubs that you've been at? I'm sure you must have an affection for Manchester City,
Yeah, of course you do, 100%. It's like we're talking now, and like you said, we're in Birch Services in the Costa Coffee, which is starting to get busy now.
This is a life. This is pure Alan Partridge.
It's a nice office.
It's raining. You don't want that.
And as you rightly say, I'm on my way up to Sunderland and Bristol City, and then tomorrow we've got the Birmingham City.
I'm going.
Aston Villa derby. Now I am a big Birmingham City fan, growing up as a kid. But I work for Aston Villa, and I want nothing more than an Aston Villa win to them.
Okay.
And so that's what football does to you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What you do is you give 100% for whoever you're working for.
Yeah.
And I'm desperate for an Aston Villa win.
Yeah.
You know, because I work there, and we all get.
And you see the people every day, and
see
you know
the people,
them.
And know what it means to them. This, that, and the other. I'm not on my own, by the way. There's a few ex-Birmingham City people being there, the manager being one of them. But that's what you do. So you always have an affection for somewhere where you've been, and you always look for the results, and you always take an interest in what's happening at that club, because there's some stalwarts still working at that club. You know, it gets people, and you know, it's their life. And you know, I mean, look at Kath Phipps.
Yeah,
how
United on reception.
How long's she been at Man United?
44 years, Kath.
You know, so that's how it affects people. So,
she still thinks I should be able to play football just because my Uncle Charlie played in the 1940s. Every time I go and see her,
a big sloppy kiss off her.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's lovely, and she gives me messages to pass on to former players. Are you seeing Gerard Piquet? Can you just give him this, and gives me a note, you know?
Can you ask him to get Lionel Messi's shirt for me?
You mentioned Lionel Messi's shirt. I went to see Berbatov recently. He doesn't do many interviews. And I needed a few players to set him up and say, you know, you can trust Andy. And Berbatov said to me, I'll only do it if you get me a signed Messi shirt.
Did he?
No footballer has ever asked me for anything like that before. So I got him a signed Messi shirt. He said, you get me that, I'll give you the best interview I've ever done. And there's been a massive reaction to it from it was brilliant.
Oh, very good. Very good.
We're getting distracted.
Yeah, so
Solskjaer's goal, it's the back of the net.
I just remember just the sort of the shock of what's just happened in this blur of a minute, you know, of one thing that you knew that that ball would be in the danger area, because it was Bex that was taking the corner, so you knew the delivery would be right, you know, you knew that there might be a chance that come from it. Big Peter had gone up and this, that and the other for the first one, you know, when Teddy's caused a little bit of chaos and confusion in there, and this one he stayed back, this, that and the other. And it was just what has just gone on in this. I remember just prior to the equaliser, kicking a piece of paper on the floor, and I started to think like a manager or like a coach, and thinking, we've done the two, we've failed at the last one. I wonder I'll be interested to see what the manager says in his post-match press conference. What is he starting to think what he's going to say now? Is he, you know, whatever? And I started, you know, and I was thinking like that, and I'm just looking at the bench, and then bang, bang, and oh my God, you know what I mean? It was just, you know, and I remember looking at, I think it was, how you pronounce Cafu? Cafu?
Yeah, Sami Cafu.
Lying on the floor in tears, and it wasn't the refs trying to pull him up. You know,
he'd gone, hadn't he?
He'd completely gone, and all this because they knew the time. They knew that they weren't going to come back for this, and you know. So that was all those emotions. If just three, then we had the function of you just said. And then the second thing that stands out from that was the open top bus coming back to Manchester was absolutely incredible. The hairs on my neck are sticking up now just thinking of it. I mean, just turning into Deansgate was just unbelievable. As far as you could see, you could just see bodies, heads, hanging off buildings, up lampposts, any vantage point a fan could get. was there, and just how long it took us. The police had estimated a time for us to get there, get to the Manchester Arena, and then so we were free to really depart from the arena, you know, and organise your way from there. And I think we were well behind schedule because just the masses of crowds. So from that point of view, they're the two things that really stick out, was the emotion of the actual final, and then the homecoming was really, really unbelievable.
Last 7 or 8 minutes now. After Peter left to join Sporting Club, Manchester United didn't really have a settled goalkeeper.
No.
Lots of big money was spent on Fabian Barthez.
Yeah.
Mark Bosnich played, Tim Howard. It wasn't really until Edwin van der Sar came, who you recommended.
Yeah.
Because you got a little tip off at Fulham, didn't you? And you explained that in the book in great detail, and it's very interesting and worth reading. Why do you think so many players struggled? I can remember vividly going
players
into
goalkeepers
going to interview Ray van der Howe, maybe 2001, and into Carrington, and saying, should we sit down and do it here? And he looked at Mark Bosnich and said, I'm not doing it in view of him. I thought, that is a relationship that has completely broken down here.
I don't think Bosy had a relationship with anyone.
Right. But, you know, reading between the lines, Fabian Barthez wasn't the most popular person at the club either. But I might be wrong there. But.
Yeah, I mean, you might have heard that from different players.
Yeah.
I can only...
It was good with you.
Yeah, I can only speak from me personally with my relationship with the various goalkeepers that I work with. And like you say, in the book I talk about approaching Sir Alex and saying, listen, there's goalkeepers coming in here, you know, Massimo Terribi, Ricardo Lopez, Roy Carroll.
Yeah, that's free. I've not even mentioned.
You know, people that were coming in.
I saw Massimo last year at Modena. He was working under Crespo.
He's a lovely man.
Yeah.
Lovely man, you know. They were coming into the club and I hadn't had a say in, you know, and I turned around and I said, look, boss, when I'm out socially, people are coming up to me, United fans are coming up, really having a go about the standard of the goalkeepers. Now, this is not an hatchet job on any of those goalkeepers. What I wanted to say to the manager, and which I eventually did, was, if you bring in a goalkeeper, let me do the scouting on the goalkeeper, let me recommend the goalkeeper, and then I can be accountable for it, and if it doesn't work out, then I'll pay the consequences, whatever. And he just turned around to me and he thought for a moment. He said, do you want a TC? Right. It's all yours. Fetch as a goalkeeper. So, initially I'd bought Tim Howard over. But Tim was really coming over to be number two, to nurture and to bring through to eventually be number one. But he'd done that well in that pre-season, in the first pre-season in America,
yeah,
that the manager started him and you know.
United had tried to sign Van der Sar.
A few times. When he went to Juventus, it didn't happen. This, that, and the other. So I was aware of Edwin, and I was aware of us trailing before. What I did feel was when Edwin was at Fulham. And whenever we'd played them or I'd watched Fulham or whatever, I thought Edwin, a bit like what the manager said in 96 with Peter, I thought there was no edge to his game a little bit. There was goals going in and I'm thinking, a goalkeeper of your standard, Edwin, should be really, really saving that. But he didn't. But we knew what it was about. And it was just a chance meeting after the game. Goalie coach said to me, I asked him about him, like I did with every goalie coach around the country, what's he like to work with, getting as much information as you can, is he punctual, is he this, is he does he do the work, does he do? And he said to me, look, he's really fit, he insists on working, he'll only have a day off when everybody else has a day off, this, that and the other, blah blah blah. And I just thought at that time he had the credentials, he had the mental capacity to cope with Man United from where he'd been before. It didn't work out for him at Juventus, but he was an international goalkeeper. He'd been in Champions League finals early in his career, this, that and the other. And I thought he was the one out of everyone that would be able to cope. One, Phillip Peters' gloves, and being involved at a big club with a big club mentality that needed to win trophies every year. And so we got back on the train back to Manchester, and I said to the manager, I said, listen, there's a clause in his contract, you can get him for this. I think he's the one. The manager said, look, he said, have you seen, he's 35. I said, Gaffer, I said, he's fit as anything. I said, you signed me when I was 35. I said, I was nowhere near as fit as him. I said, and mentally, he's strong, distribution, this, that, and the other. And I got a phone call. I was on holiday. I always remember I was riding the bikes with the kids. And he just rang me up and he said, right, I've taken your advice. He said, you'll be working with Edmund on the sale next season. And that's as simple as it was. And I put the phone down and said, right, that was it.
I think United fans would like to thank you for that because he was brilliant. Moving on now and finally, what do you make of David De Gea as a goalkeeper? What does he do well? Where does he need to improve?
Do you know what he does well? And I say that I make no bones about this. My hero growing up was a goalkeeper called Pat Jennings.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Pat Jennings simplified goalkeeping. He wouldn't make things look spectacular or whatever. But the one thing that Pat Jennings did, he saved shots with his feet. He stood up big, and it's about keeping the ball out of his net. And some of the saves I've seen David save this season alone, let alone the previous seasons, with his feet, his reactions. At the moment, and I say this wholeheartedly, he's the best in the world. Certainly, you know.
I know
you're going to say, probably say Manuel Neuer, yeah, right, or yeah, whatever. Well, he's in bed at the moment, yeah, nursing a broken ankle,
yeah,
or an ankle limit thing, yeah, so he's not playing.
Yeah.
But he's certain when he's on it, he's on it this season. Yeah, you know, there's no one better.
What else does he do? His distribution. I remember speaking to Eric Steele, and he says.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the big things that they spotted in him early as a kid.
When he was playing for Spain's under-17s.
Yeah, great with his feet. I mean, what game was it? It was Huddersfield last week, although we lost the game. You know, he's killed one out of the air, then he's flicked it over the centre forward, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's if Messi or Ronaldo had done that, everybody'd been raving about it. But that's the calmness and the confidence he's got in his own ability at this moment in time. You know, he's the best in the Premier League by a mile. And I would say at the moment he's the best in the world.
And Manchester United also have Argentina's first choice goalkeeper, Sergio Romero.
Yeah.
Would he be competent for most Premier League teams?
Yes. I saw him actually on Tuesday night. I was down at Swansea.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the first time I've really seen him close up. He's a different keeper to David, you know.
What type of keeper is he?
If you see him, I don't think he's as quick as Ryan with David. He's not as good with his feet as this is not knocking him. It's just the high level of performance.
Comparing him to the best in the world.
To the best in the world. And like you say, going back to your original question, is he more than capable of playing in most Premier League teams? Yeah, he's a, listen, he's a more than capable understudy to David. You know, you've got two good goalkeepers there, but he at the moment he's the best in the world, David. And I would probably say high praise to Eric Steele, as I went and got Edwin at the end of his career, and he proved to be a massive hit for Man United. Then Eric Steele must get credit for going and getting David De Gea at the start of his career, really. Although he was in the Atletico Madrid team at a very early age, Eric saw something in him to say he's going to be Man United's goalkeeper for a very long time, and he's been proven right.
he called it right, didn't he? And yeah. He's, I think Eric's now back over living near Derby.
Yeah, I'd speak to him on a regular basis, obviously, because I recommended Eric for my job when I had to quit with my knee. So we speak on a regular basis. He's back working for the FA.
Yeah.
You know, and
St George's Park.
Yeah. You know, and
Rennie Mullenstein, who was there, he's going to India now with Berbatov and Wes Brown. So it's a lot of them players who and coaches are at Manchester United. They're still around, but that great team's been dismantled. We've both got games to go to. Your book.
Yours is a lot nearer than mine.
Yeah, well, tomorrow I'm travelling all around England. I'm going to the Birmingham Derby and then Leicester against Everton and then I'm at Burnley on Monday. There to be shot at, published by De Corbertin. Do you know how to pronounce it?
Go on. De Corbertin.
Some brilliant stories there. I do thank you for your time and wish you all the best for the future. Hopefully get Aston Villa back into the Premier League. Villa Park was an away game that a lot of United fans love. Not just because it was the venue
so
many. Yeah, I mean, the semi-final memories as
some
well.
Great,
but
great performance.
Birmingham's a great city and Villa Park's a great stadium. So,
yeah,
all the best, Tony.
Thank you very much, Andy. And go out and get the book.
So that's it from this podcast. It's International Weekend. So we won't be doing another podcast until Old Trafford next week. I'll be there for the Newcastle United home game. We will have a new United We Stand Out for that game as well. We're working on it at the moment. There's loads of decent material in there. I guarantee that when you read it, you'll find new things out about Manchester United. 44 pages. We've held the price for 9 years now. And if you want to subscribe, if you're outside the UK, there's probably never been a cheaper time to do it, especially with the weak pound. Go to our website, uwsonline.com. You can subscribe to the digital edition, which works out slightly cheaper, and you don't have to pay postage on that. Or you can get a printed edition. We've got subscribers now in 37 countries, I think, and we will be sending the mags out to you next Saturday as soon as we get them from the printers in Manchester. So watch out for the next issue of the fanzine, and we'll be joining you again after the Newcastle United home game for the next edition of the podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Tony. Until next time, goodbye.
Black Friday is bringing the sunshine and the savings with Cheap Caribbean Vacations. Right now, you can score $500 off site-wide vacation packages when you book 4 nights or more. From Cancun to Aruba to Punta Cana, your next beach vacay is calling your name. It's the perfect time to book. What are you waiting for? Go to cheapcaribbean.com and get $500 off your next vacation today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Owning a home is full of surprises. Some wonderful, some not so much. And when something breaks, it can feel like the whole day unravels. That's why HomeServe exists. For as little as $4.99 a month, you'll always have someone to call. A trusted professional ready to help, bringing peace of mind to 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to HomeServe.com. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.